Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening, we'll talk about the United Nations General Assembly and Africa. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Makori. Vincent is the host of Africa 54. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And joining us also from New York by phone is another colleague, Abdushakur Aboud of VOA Swahili Service. Hamjambo, Abdushakur.
Tujambo.
How is New York?
New York is very cold today.
I see.
And the assembly is finishing, so it's becoming empty.
I see. We have also a rainy day in Washington, too. And we also have Abdi Latif Ega. Abdi is a scholar and novelist. He joins us by phone from New York. Good afternoon, Mr. Ega.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on the show.
You're very much welcome. As I said, we'll be talking about the United Nations General Assembly and how it pertains to Africa. Let me start with the New York people, beginning with Abdushakur. How is are things going there, especially as far as the delegations from Africa are concerned?
For Africa, almost all the delegations have left. All the leaders have left. Today, you just had the Prime Minister from Lesotho and Angola and Cape Verde, and later on, you have the Foreign Minister from DRC and Vice President from Burundi. But otherwise, I would say 80% of all leaders and delegates have already left New York.
I'm told some of them came with very huge delegations.
Yeah, that's a very amazing. One amazing talk in town was the delegation from Sierra Leone, which is said they came with about 70 people, a country which had a problem with Ebola. So there are some places where they came with huge delegations. The Tanzanian delegation, interestingly enough, I was told at the last minute, there were so many journalists who joined the delegation, and suddenly all of them, they were going to the airport, they were told, get back, the delegation is too big. It's a strange thing how they got it at the last minute. So, but you do have those big delegations as usual.
I see. Mr. Ega, talking of delegations and Africa and all this General Assembly, what in your opinion are these people taking back to Africa from this assembly?
Well, I think it is an annual thing, and this happens all the time. And I think, as we all know, the relationship between the UN and the African states is precarious. Membership not on the powerful Security Council and things like that. So I think it's a great attendance in terms of leaders affirming that they're leaders by just coming to New York, but I am not sure what it is that they will actually implement when they go back, because what is different from this year that they couldn't do the last year?
I see. Vincent, there are those people, some people have argued that this General Assembly, as far as countries, especially from the developing world, especially in Africa, are concerned, it's just an annual ritual where they just come shopping, enjoy New York, and then go back home.
I hold the same kind of view, that such a waste of time and money by African leaders and their big delegations, it has no value to their nations. And even the speeches they deliver, if you look, in most cases, actually nobody's in the plenary to listen to them. Many times they talk to empty or half-empty rooms, and they're making speeches that are of no consequence, regurgitating things that have been said over and over by so many of the other leaders, and things that are not new or do not have any new meaning. And so you feel that what a waste of time, what a waste of resources for countries that are crying out for more money, for more resources for development. This is a time, this is money that could be utilized at home, time that could be spent resolving issues in their home countries. So what a waste of time to me. It's just a waste of time.
Yeah, Abdushakur, following up on Vincent's point here, did any of the leaders of delegations stand out in whatever assessment they gave to the UN General Assembly?
Well, each one stood out at different points. With President Mugabe had his own point, but coming to Vincent's point, yeah, it's true. To a certain extent, it's a waste of money if they could bring down the number of delegations. But one should not forget that it is through the meet at the UN, but the side meetings, which I think is more significant, which we never report or never hear of, because during this 4 or 5 days, it's the biggest opportunity where it's not only the countries meeting. Now, I agree, questionable, what are they going to do with others, but a lot of organizations, a lot of bilateral negotiations that really take place over here. So that's one important point to think about, but now to check and see, do these bilateral agreements between organizations and countries bear the fruit of what they're talking? That's one problem, I think. Otherwise, when you talk of what they're talking at the meeting, there was the meeting, let's say, President Kenyatta addressed with the president of Malawi on AIDS. It was very well attended, but it was organized by UNAIDS. The meeting concerning SDGs, changing from MDGs to SDGs, it was... A lot of things have come up, but now, as my other colleague just said earlier, the question is implementation. Are they following it, or will they follow up? That's where the problem is.
So, Ms. Egan, this it's one thing to come to attend and get some ideas, and the big shots decide what you're supposed to do. And as Abshakur is saying, implementation is the problem. Unfortunately enough, they're not even good at implementing what has been decided at the UN.
I think what we should possibly address, I mean, I'll probably pose this to everyone there, is that what is the relationship between the UN and Africa? What kind of power do we have in there? Is it a place where we're actually being served well in all those things? Because if it's, on the panel, what I don't hear is questioning the UN itself and our membership to it as flag-bearing nations, right? So that's what I would like to put out, so maybe we should discuss that too, because this is an annual event. It always happens, but it seems to be, you know, business as usual. Everyone is lamenting about that, but maybe we should move the discussion forward to understand maybe and have your view, everyone's view on our relationship with the UN itself. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the relationship with the UN has been determined by
the big boys. The
financial power. This organization is led by the superpowers of this world, the big powers of these countries, of this world, and it is all based on the contributions they make to the UN system. As long as Africa remains a poor continent, as long as Africa remains on the peripheries of development and economic power, it remains voiceless, and the UN doesn't pay as much attention. You can come there and make so many speeches, and coherent as some of them I was listening to, and cry out for fair representation. All the continent has over 1 billion people. We need to be represented. At the end of the day, it is about who contributes how much money and therefore who has more weight. Mm. And it is a reality that Africa has to live with, and that is why I think the continent should focus more on making itself a relevant player in international issues by developing itself, by focusing on implementing some of the very basic strategies out there so that it can earn respect. It is a continent of 1 billion people, a country is over 50, but it is a continent that has very little respect globally, and mostly because of the way it conducts its own affairs. That is the bottom line.
Then, Vincent, then in that case, if I hear you correctly, their quest to have one African country be a member of the UN Security Council, is that misplaced then?
It sounds like a fair call. It is a fair a request, and that's why we saw something like South Africa coming closer to. Whenever we talk about that, you think about South Africa. But again, when you look at South Africa, it is an economic power on the continent. So it's all determined by how economically powerful are you. Now, being a member of the organ that makes decisions, of course, might give Africa some say in some of the issues that are decided by the Security Council, because that's the key. It's not just the UN system, but the Security Council. It is a fair deal, but at the end of the day, how big is a continent? To what extent will this one member really effectively represent the continent?
Yes. Abdushakul, following up on that point, interacting with those members of the delegation from Africa, how are the grumblings? How are the yearnings for having one of them be a member, say, of the UN Security Council?
Well, A lot of people are talking about it. The Prime Minister of Angola mentioned it. I think it's the problem is not only the Security Council. It's true. It's a question of decision-making. It's a question of who pays the biggest bill and who's contributing more to do that. But what really is happening here is that I have an anecdote. It was one of the worst reporting sessions we've ever had. Security was very high, and we couldn't access any place. And this is one example of all what we're talking about. And I met somebody from the UN, another African lady, and he told me, listen, let me tell you one thing. When the Asian delegation comes here, every embassy and every country makes sure that all their journalists get access to their people. But when it comes to we Africans, no African embassy or African delegation is available to help you because we were all frustrated. So that shows one thing. It's a question of what Vincent said. We have to organize ourselves to have people who are capable of doing the job. When you look at the list of some of those delegates coming here, is that most of them are family members. They have nothing to do with the meeting, and that's where the problem is. So we have to go back to look into how can we benefit from all this? We can talk and they can say they want to be in the Security Council, but the others are watching how we handle ourselves. Just at this meeting, how we get frustrated, they're watching and seeing you are disorganized, you're not well organized. Just the organization factor is a big problem.
Abdul Latif, because there are those who say Asian countries, Western countries are eager to have the press talk to them because they have an agenda they're pushing forward. But most African delegations, the leaders, they don't have anything to push. So there's no need, maybe, to amplify whatever they've come for.
I think that I'm not sure it's all about that, but I think there is an anxious relationship between the journalists back home and the ones here who are supposed to cover them. So already there is that kind of situation going on, and. Again, the larger issues, I think, maybe what Vincent touched about is actually, we could also look at our own organization, like, for example, the AU, and remember the kind of relationship the international court system, what the response was between Uhuru Kenyatta and all the other African leaders in terms of fairness and constitution and things like that. They use the AU and the UN as a political platform when they needed to.
I see.
We saw that. In fact, some of the speeches were almost revolutionary in Canada. I think, fundamentally, it's a question of political power, and you cannot have political power without economical power.
I see.
And those are the two things. So what we are actually coming here as flag bearers. and sitting here, but it's very difficult to have your say when you yourself are being given all these ideas for how to develop the relationship between you and the UN. Our own AU is not, has no teeth in the sense that it's not at the forefront of even African.
And
things like that. So I think continentally we have to reach much further, and the discussion is much bigger than people coming here to the assembly. Because the relationship they have is already very weak.
Okay.
Yeah, if I may piggyback on that, actually, mentioning the Africa Union itself, I think it is on its own a demonstration of how poorly the continent has been doing. I mean, if the African leaders could sit at the AU headquarters and make an assessment, a very honest assessment of how they're running the continent, and come to a point where they can say, how can we earn respect on the world stage? How can we clean up the act politically, economically? How can we spur development on our continent? Then, just then, they can start earning some respect.
Mm-hmm.
There is no point of traveling across seas to go to come to the U.S. or to Europe or to other places and give speeches about being part of a world system when at the home front, there is evidence that you're not really up to the task.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot become global leaders when you cannot run your house right on the continent. So I think until that time when African leaders can become honest and be very, you know, forthright about what they need to do on the continent, it will continue being the same situation in terms of the relationship between Africa and the UN.
Mm. Okay, let's take a short break here. Hold your thought, gentlemen. We'll come back and finish a discussion of the UN General Assembly and Africa.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Blended sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee it.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the UN General Assembly and Africa. Our panelists are my colleagues, Abud Shakul Abud of VOA Swahili Service and Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54. We also have Abdi Latif Egger. He's a Somali scholar and novelist, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Before that short break, gentlemen, Vincent, I brought up the issue of the African leaders not harmonizing their positions, coming with one or two or three points on the agenda to put on the table in New York and say, this is our stand. Abdul Shakul, is that a valid point? Because each 54 countries come, they just come there, each one talks his own things, and then go away. It's as if they don't have an organization that binds them together, that they would sit and come with them at least one position, say, we stand for this and push for that.
No, in reality, they do come because the AU here in New York organizes the meetings. They had like a whole day meeting on the development, sustainable development goals. And they come up with some position, but the question is, once again, is that how it is presented, how it is done. There's a lot of work being done behind the scenes, but I think so, the organizational and presentation is where it is a problem. Being able to go and present and fight for those rights or express the points what they need. But I think they do a lot of meetings and work around it. Like other all meetings, but the outcome is the question.
I see.
Well, just meetings. Of course, there have been meetings over and over and over which yield absolutely zero. I think the key is that until the continent starts to really develop and show that it has the will to fight things like corruption, mismanagement of public resources, a continent that receives a lot of aid and grants from outside, you cannot afford to be squandering this on enriching politicians and their families and wasting such resources going to meaningless ventures outside. So I think the key is show that you have the capacity and the wherewithal to develop the continent and get it to a point where you earn respect. I insist the respect will have to be earned by how you run the countries, how you run the continent. You can't just demand it. You can't just hope that because you're a million or a billion people on the continent, then we can just earn respect. It is how we conduct our affairs economically, politically, and even on some of the social issues.
Then in that case, is this where this issue of good governance comes in?
Exactly.
Because I was listening to President Obama during his speech where, without naming names, he castigated those leaders who changed constitutions and one stick there, allegedly to finish their programs.
Which tells you a lot that African leaders need to be brought into a room to be given a lecture on the need to be democratic, on the need to fight corruption, and they sit there and nod their heads like they don't have a clue that these are things that undermine the development of their countries.
Exactly.
I mean, it's embarrassing. It is not fair. It feels really bad for some of us to look at that too, because you believe that these are very intelligent people.
Yeah.
Ideally, they should mean well for the country, but why should you be people to be told why you need to fight corruption, why you need to have a democratic systems in your countries? I mean, those are things you should be talking about yourself
before you come. Yes, Shabu Shakur.
Yeah, I want to tell Vincent is that it is true, we are looking only at the leaders, but we are forgetting one thing, is that I don't think so they need to be sitting down in a room and be told. They understand very well, but we are forgetting the real thing. Once again, I still insist, the people who are around these leaders, don't forget these leaders are sitting in a palace in one capital of Africa. They hardly know what is happening outside, and they're depending on people who have different interests outside and coming and telling them. I've experienced with many presidents, they want to do something else, and the people are doing, the advisors and all that.
Oh, yes, they should be blamed. It's up to them.
The corruption system which is there, the corruption in the system. Take the example, I would take Abdoulaye Diouf in Senegal. It's now Macky Sall who's doing a lot of effort to fight corruption. But the leaders before him, they start the process, and in the middle, they're told, hey, listen, you can't send this guy to court, this is this and this, and you see it stopped. In Tanzania, take example. We have so many scandals which have come out, but we have not seen one single person brought to court. So I don't think so. It's only to blame
Abdishakur, you're not elected to seclude yourself in some palace or some presidential suite somewhere. Your business is to implement policies that will help develop a country. You cannot give that as an excuse, because then that means you have failed, because you have allowed your leadership to be hijacked by your friends, your cronies, and they're running the system. Mm-hmm. So that is what? A sign of weakness in leadership, that is what puts the continent behind.
And let me bring in
Abdul
Latif here. Don't you think there's this common saying, the buck stops with you, the leader? So we can't exonerate them from these failures, because it's ultimately held, they should be held responsible for their failures.
Well, I think, yes, if we want to be historical and believe that the world in Africa is detached from the IMF or from the World Bank or from all these big capital concerns that are involved in the resources of Africa. You know, Africa is not insular. It's a player within the world. And there is a historical relationship. And part of that historical relationship is, for example, the one to be super developed like the United States, one has to be underdeveloped like Africa. So one underdevelops the other. But, you know, the questions here are more so about our perspective as Africa. What is our perspective really? Are we consistently going to be managed and told that this is what we need? This is the type of development that needs to be happening. You know, and this idea of actually casting, you know, a leadership or things like that based on an idea that they are completely independent and have this and that to say is, you know, that this is not a reflection of the reality of the history that's on the ground.
I see.
So we have to consider all of these things. We have to come from you know, even looking at the way how we're going to have that institution, either function or completely abandoned, same as the UN. If it's not serving us, and it's got nothing to do with us, maybe it's time to consider even that discussion.
I see.
And you know, there is no denying that Africa has suffered the attack, the assault of the external powers in terms of the plan of it, its resources. It was colonized, and we know there are all these schemes from other countries to just plunder the wealth of the continent. But everybody is aware of that. African leaders are aware of what happened. We know the history. You cannot use that as an excuse to continually be, forever be mired in that situation. There has to be a kind of a clear strategy to move ahead, to go beyond the damage that was done by colonialism. So, I mean,
what are you saying?
And also, you cannot say that, you know, exploitation and the fund of corporations has actually stopped. There's a new relationship between Africa and this idea that, you know, colonialism is passé or post-colonialism is passé and all this, that you need to suck it up, is oppressive in itself.
Exactly.
You know, that's a development theory of how
and I think
on this forward.
I think that's a valid...
All I'm trying to say is that there is a huge interrelationship in this world with everyone and the flow of capital and all those things. And we have a position. And what we need to do is come in and out to keep our position. What is it and what is our perspective?
I see.
I wanted to say that, just so that it's not lost in this conversation, it's not to say that there are no brilliant African leaders. We talk about over 50 countries. Mm. There are some shining examples. When you go across the continent, there's some presidents who have really taken a lead in taking their countries to different levels of development. Mm. I don't want to mention specific countries, but we know that some countries are doing very well economically. Mm. They have implemented policies that seem to work and could help those countries develop and defeat things like corruption. Mm. But at the same time, you find they have some serious political issues. There are some shining examples, but we're talking about over 50 countries.
Yes,
there needs to be much more to give a positive image of the entire continent, because these few gems may not necessarily suffice when it comes to the image that the world gets from Africa as a continent.
Abdu Shakol, you've covered these meetings before. What did you take out mainly from this particular one?
As I said earlier, this one was a really difficult one to cover compared to the other ones because of the high-level security. Mm. We were we had like 3-4 different places of security inside the UN. So what I would take about here is that it was in the problem which happened with the 70th meeting was because of the MDGs meeting, which took place 3 days before, and the visit of the Pope. So the general meeting this time, I think, was overshadowed by all that, and very little was known or came out, because most of the leaders, as soon as those meetings ended and each one gave their speech, and they immediately left because they were here for a long time. But what I'm taking is, out of 70 years of UN, African leaders are calling for a reform again. For the past 10 years, they're saying they were proposing changes. So Museveni insisted on that, and a number of leaders. So I don't know. I feel that there has not been really intense discussions like the past. Mm-hmm. In the past, we had more of civil society we saw. Of the past, we had a lot of organizations from Africa. This time, I think they were lacking, and that's one of the thing. I think so. These three events at a time was an overkill.
I see. It's very interesting. Museveni was calling for change. He has attended almost that of those sessions. Briefly, Vincent, your final thought on this 70th session.
Yes. Well, I can say that it did not necessarily achieve anything. We know that the discussions have mostly been focused on the situation in Syria. I think the most beneficial discussion was on the fight against extreme, violent extremism, which at least touched on not only ISIS, but also on Boko Haram. Mm. I didn't hear much about Al-Shabaab, but at least I think people can come out of this with that, and also the sideline discussions on the development goals and also HIV that we covered briefly today.
If we have about 10 seconds, your final thought, 10 seconds, please. Don't we go beyond that?
I think the 10 seconds I will use to say, look, this organization, we as Africans have been in it for a very long time. We need to really reconsider our membership there if we're not adequately served. But beyond even that, we need to really push our own success.
I see.
In development and in all these other areas, we cannot just continue to have these prescriptions from outside, mainly either the UN or NGO or other places.
I see.
They're not necessary. The families or the perspectives that we need.
Well, we are out of time, gentlemen. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel for tonight, my colleagues, Abshakol Abud of VOA Swahili Service, and my colleague here, Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54. And thank you, Abdulatif Ega. Abdi is a Somali scholar and novelist. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
So much.
You're welcome. Our producer, as usual, has been Jackson Mvunganyi. Our engineer tonight was Peter Handley. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email address is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.